This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, January the 29th, 2016. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. The Hampshire Chronicle extracts we will be reading for you this week have been edited by Liz and Gordon Legg. Now first I'll give you a few regular notices. And the first is, if you have any problems with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01 962 870 370. And a reminder here that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. Now, if you know anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, Irene can also help you with that. Give her a call and she'll make the necessary arrangements. Her number again, 01962 870 370. Oh, and just one more reminder, for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's www.winchestertalkingnews, all lowercase, no spaces, .com. Now just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. And so on to this week's edition of the Chronicle. Your readers are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Jerry Tough.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Ros Lydiard. And as this is this team's first recording for the newspaper for you in 2016, we'd all like to wish you a little bit late our very best wishes for a happy and healthy new year.
Happy New Year.
Oh, that was nice. They said Happy New Year to you. But we'll go on to our main headlines this week, which are Arts Centre Anger, DNA Matches Highly Likely, Street Bombed for £100 million Drama. So the first headline story, please, Jerry.
Arts Centre Anger. More than 150 residents are backing a campaign to halt plans for a new arts complex at a Winchester college. Concern is mounting as Peter Simmons College looks to replace its current facility with one next to Haverley Road. Neighbours have voiced their opposition in a letter to the College Board of Governors. We write as neighbours of Peter Simmons to let you, the college, know of our strong opposition to your plans for a new arts building, the letter says. Your scheme has caused a great deal of concern among residents. We would ask you to do what you can to halt the project now. The expansion of the college, leading to more students and increased traffic, was another issue. Principal Stephen Carville, responding to the letter, said, "We are currently in the process of reviewing all of the comments received with the project team in order to see how we can address the principal issues raised, and hopefully we'll shortly be in a position to publish information on the proposed scheme to all parties concerned. However, we are still at the early stages of design for the proposed building. As previously reported by the Chronicle, the complex will be open to the public and funnel students along Cranworth Road, allegedly creating a safety problem. A new entrance at the top of the road will also be opened on a blind corner. My major concern is, as a mum, the safety of the road for my children and the people that use it," said Laura Broadhurst of Cranworth Road. "When the students finish, it's like a stampede of football followers coming out of a stadium. I backed the letter because we have tried to get in contact with the principal and vice principal, but just keep getting passed on. Nobody wants to stop the college growing, as education is very important and many people who live nearby have benefited from Peter Simmons. The college has grown rapidly in recent years to have around 4,000 students who travel from as far as the Isle of Wight. Adam Clark Williams of Cranworth Road said the names had been gathered from residents in Haverley Road, Cranworth Road, Fairfield Road, Owens Road, Brassey Road and Boscobel Road. The names represent a significant section of residents living near the college, he said. There is a groundswell of feeling. Our fundamental objection is to the siting of the building and what has been open space for decades. They've always concentrated their activity on the far side of the site. We don't think this is the right place. The residents are very concerned that this represents a first move across the campus, the first stage of a major expansion of their footprint. Mr. Clark Williams said the current art buildings are fairly run down and added the college should look at redeveloping them instead. Gunilla Jones, a resident of Cranworth Road for more than 40 years, says she is horrified that the college will be placing the building opposite her home. Mrs. Jones added, I cannot understand how the college can allow this.
DNA match is highly likely. DNA found on grandmother Georgina Edmonds' blouse is 26 million times more likely to be that of Matthew Hamlin than someone unrelated to him, a court heard. Hamlin is accused of battering Mrs. Edmonds to death at her riverside home at Branbridge near Eastleigh in January 2008. The prosecution alleges that Mrs. Edmonds, 77, was tortured, beaten and stabbed to get her to reveal her bank card PIN. The trial heard that Hamlin was tried and acquitted of her murder in 2012. The police went back to check samples that had not initially been tested, including sticky tape taken from Mrs. Edmonds' blouse. Winchester Crown Court heard from forensic expert Sonia Marshall, who analysed the sticky tape. She agreed the link between Hamlin and DNA on the blouse was a high match probability, which the jury has heard has been put at 26 million to one. DNA samples taken from the alleged murder weapon, a rolling pin, found it was 800 times more likely to have come from Hamlin than anybody else. William Mousley, QC, defending, raised the issue of notes that Mrs. Marshall made during the initial investigation in 2009. Mr. Mousley said that the note included the line that drawing conclusions about DNA profiles other than Mrs. Edmonds was tantamount to a shot in the dark, and this is very unsafe and not at all robust. The police have no illusions they have the perpetrator's DNA. In court, Mrs. Marshall said that note referred to trying to make deductions from a profile that could match hundreds of people. Later on, Hamlin had been rearrested, and they had his DNA profile and were able to see if it matched. It is a different question. Could this person have contributed? In 2009, the question was, can we pull out a profile? There is difference between whose profile is this and does Matthew Hamlin match this profile?
Street bombed for £100 million drama. A bomb crater in the middle of the road, soldiers in Second World War uniforms and people in 1940s fashions, this was anything but a normal day on the streets of Winchester. The city welcomed the stars of the most expensive TV series in British history last weekend. The streets were awash with camera crews as filming of The Crown took place in College and Kingsgate streets, standing in for wartime Windsor. The £100 million Netflix drama, which centres on the early life of the Queen, saw parts of the city come to a standstill. Hundreds of people loitered on the closed-off streets. Actors and actresses in 1940s-style clothes and historic vehicles were also seen in College Street outside Winchester College. Scenes were also filmed inside the Great Hall, closed to the public on Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday. The Crown stars former Doctor Who Matt Smith as a young Prince Philip and Claire Foy as Elizabeth in her younger years. It will span 60 episodes over six series. Local City Councillor Fiona Mather, who represents St Michael Ward, where the filming took place, saw some of the action. She said, "It's really great that filmmakers want to come to Winchester. I was very impressed by how they have made the artificial bomb crater and by putting a mat down and putting rubble there. Quite a lot of things have been filmed in Winchester, and living around here, we are used to having these enormous lorries and canteens for the actors." But she said some residents were concerned about parking and added, "Not everyone agrees with it, but on the whole, most people think it's a price worth paying." Tim Pride, manager of Kingsgate Wines and Provisions, said, "It is always a good thing to have a bit of coverage. We were open when the filming took place, and it was very busy, and we had a few more people coming in." The film is written by Peter Morgan, who also wrote Frost, Nixon, and 2006 Oscar winner film The Queen.
Thank you all very much. We'll give you the death announcements now, and they'll be followed by Christian comment, as usual, read for us by Claire. The first announcement. Burke, Francis Raymond Burke, passed away peacefully on the 18th of January, aged 84 years.
Collins, Mahala Mary Collins, on 17th January, aged 90.
Freeth, Jennifer Mary Jenny Freeth, on the 21st of January in Southampton General Hospital, aged 56.
Hagger, Alistair John Frederick Hagger of Leicester, formerly of Winchester, suddenly on 7th of January.
Hoare, Lieutenant Colonel Marcus Hoare, FCMA, CGMA, RN retired, peacefully but unexpectedly on the 14th of January, aged 80.
Ilsley, Sheila Ilsley, passed away on 18th January.
Keating, Beryl Keating, passed away peacefully in West Home Nursing Home on the 20th of January, aged 86.
Merritt, Christine Merritt, peacefully on 18th of January, aged 78 years.
Pollock Gore, May Phyllis Pollock Gore, passed on 20th of January, aged 88.
Proverbs, Jean Proverbs, veterinary surgeon, died peacefully on 22nd January, aged 85.
Smith, Peter Smith, died suddenly at home on the 15th of January.
Thompson, Vera Thompson, on 20th of January, peacefully at home, aged 86.
Wright, Marjorie Wright, sadly passed away on the 14th of January at the Countess Mountbatten Hospice, aged 87. And we're going to go on to Christian comment now. I think Mary Gray is contributor this week, isn't she, Claire?
That's right.
Thank you.
And she's headed the article from the heart of the Gaza Strip. Last Sunday, many of us read a famous gospel story where Jesus enters the synagogue in Nazareth and, to hushed voices, people who had not heard him before, proclaimed those words of Luke's gospel from the prophet Isaiah, beginning, "The Spirit has come upon me. He sent me to give the good news to the poor." These words and what follows have become famous and known as the Nazareth Manifesto. They have acted as a beacon call to many liberation theologians around the world who seek justice in response to the poverty and oppression in many contexts. I write now in Gaza, with the Christian population of 1%, conscious also that Pope Francis has called for a year of mercy. So now I ask listeners to suspend their political judgments as I ask for mercy for what I saw and see in the heart of Gaza, with its 2 million people living in the aftermath of the war of 2014. Can there be compassion especially for the innocent ones? Mercy for the traumatised children who have now lived through three wars. Mercy for the young people. Gaza has an unemployment rate of 40%, but 60% for young people who are highly educated. Mercy for the families still living in bombed, destroyed houses because there is nowhere else to go. Mercy for those disabled and injured in the conflict who try to make a living. But most of all, mercy for this small land in its desperate struggle to survive. Yet mercy is already present in the commitment of numerous NGOs from all over the world, without whom the people of Gaza would starve and certainly not survive. Mercy is present in the hopeful spirit of so many young people. I saw a radiant group of young women, all with university degrees, and determined there would be a future for them. Mercy is present in the work of NGOs like Caritas, who do psychosocial work with young children, helping them to cope with their fears, even terror, as well as giving them some nourishing food each day. Hope is present in the courage of people who try to reconstruct their homes from the rubble, breaking stones with their bare hands, trying to separate the tangled iron rods so they can be reused. Given the sheer amount of bombed houses and a bleak landscape of destruction, this is an overwhelming sign of people's will to live and survive. One young woman was an amazing witness to this. From Mauritania in West Africa, she worked with a Norwegian NGO, trying to help families prepare for another conflict. She tries to help them deal with their anxiety and strengthen their houses against a possible attack. I had already seen the synagogue site where Jesus is thought to have proclaimed the Nazareth Manifesto, now a small but beautiful church in Nazareth. I hope that when the manifesto is proclaimed today, the world will bring transforming compassion to Gaza in this year of mercy. And
now on to letters from the editor. There was a huge bag of posts for the editor this week, all very mixed topics, and we've selected 12 of them for you. And Robin, if you'd start us off with the first letter, please.
It's entitled Sort Our Parking. I think it's obvious that Winchester has come forward in every conceivable way, economically, artistically, and in tourism. We have now become victims of our own success. Whilst we have been establishing festivals in music, beer, dance and poetry, the Christmas market, ice rink, hat fair, plus our own street market, have all brought prosperity to this beautiful old city. There is so much more to tap into. Our museum is not big enough. When you have famous restaurateurs coming into a city, you know that this city is making its new history. It's a place that people want to come to. 7 years ago, there was a crisis. We didn't have enough tourism. Of course, there are people who will criticise, and in a way, I don't blame them, because with this fantastic response from tourism, we are nowhere near prepared by way of parking. Parking will always be needed for the local communities. There are people who that need to shop, and the bus service does not take them where they wish to be. Often you need your car to get to park and ride, so no help there to keep the carbon down. We have also, coming into focus, three of the biggest projects that the city has seen in years: Barton Farm, Silver Hill, and Station Approach. All of this is in the pipeline, whilst this wonderful explosion of tourism is going forward and getting stronger. We are far from ready by way of parking, even in the evenings. Are we going to kill the golden goose because in this 21st century we can't think of the correct way to place to put car parking, mainly for the small businesses also? Winchester is made up of small diverse businesses which make Winchester a must. They need parking. Eileen Berry, City Councillor, Priors Dean Road, Hairstock.
And another car-related letter comes from Edward Chase, M-I-M-E-C-E. And he says, get the facts right. When James Anderson, in the Chronicle Letters, January the 21st, challenged my original letter, in the Chronicle Letters, December the 31st, please, can he get his facts right? It is not the smell of diesel that kills you, but the odourless byproducts like NOx, SO2, and particulates. Also, there is the CO2 that causes global warming. Whilst it's true that an electric car is displacing some pollution or noise to a power station or wind farm, these are much more efficient and less polluting than even the best car engine. It does not cost his claimed £1 to get the equivalent mileage of a full tank on other cars, but £10 to £25, depending on peak, off-peak electricity price. 2p per mile at minimum. All cars need many tons of minerals and crude oil, dug up to make their steel, aluminium and plastic. The heavier the car, the more ore is needed. Why, therefore, does he just pick on ores that make batteries? How many ton miles of fuel tanker journeys does it need for a lifetime supply of diesel for his car? I was not necessarily asking for more subsidy for low-emission cars, but more focused subsidy, so that they are encouraged in pollution hotspots like Winchester, with disincentives to high polluters. At the moment, a Range Rover and a small electric car pay the same price for a parking space. But when one is stuck in a Winchester traffic jam, it is pushing out infinitely more pollution into that hotspot than the other. An electric car delivers zero to Winchester's problematic NOx level, unless you count the minuscule amount from, say, Forley that drifts back here. Edward Chase, Grange Road, St Cross, Winchester.
And another on parking. This is from AP Lodge. I think your correspondent in Nightingale Close misses the point of the letters about lack of parking in the city centre, Chronicle Letters, January the 7th. I'm glad he finds the bus service good, but he lives very near a park-and-ride bus route. If he looks at a map, he will notice there is no P&R on the north or the west side of the city. It is all to the south, near the motorway. My own local bus is hourly, or else I face a good half-mile uphill walk home with my shopping. It will cost me £2 each way. £4 may be nothing for your correspondent, but those of us with more limited resources, it is a consideration if we already have to put out money on a car. £4 will give me several hours parking at a time of my choosing. Finally, I can't help noticing that almost all the letters advocating getting rid of city centre parking come from men, presumably reasonably fit men, not older, less able men and women, nor from the child carers with a gaggle of children in tow, 90% of whom are usually female. City councillors especially should think about that. AP Lodge, Tegdown Meads, Winchester.
Chiefs Don't Get It is the heading for this from a letter from Judith Martin of Romsey Road. The civic chiefs and council leaders, reported to be vowing to drop the Silver Hill developer, just don't get it. It's not only a matter of TH real estate, or whatever they're currently called, it's the whole thing. Of course other developers are not lining up to take on the 2009 or even the 2014 scheme, which is not only redundant and outdated, but also widely known to be unpopular. If THRE can't make it stack up, why would anyone else be able to do so? If Winchester City Council were to develop either scheme, even if they had the capacity and the capability to do it, see the letter in the Chronicle on January the 21st from Councillor Gottlieb, casting serious doubt on that, it would still land the city with a giant white elephant. There is now a short window in which the City Council could do something they are qualified to do, i.e. exercise the compulsory purchase order before it expires on March the 20th. Then, instead of the overblown and greedy scheme that somehow emerged from a good initial brief, where no building was to be taller than Woolstapler's warehouse, the area would have an appropriate regeneration scheme, appropriate for the 21st century, taking into account all the retail changes over the last decade, appropriate for the area with its small-scale, Victorian texture, appropriate for the historic city in which it sits, and appropriate for the wider Winchester with its mix of heritage, cultural and social requirements. It is too early to say what will come out of the station area competition. It's tempting to paraphrase Oscar Wilde and say that to lose one contender is misfortune. To lose two looks like carelessness. But that couldn't yet be a template for a new Silver Hill. Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And another letter on the vexed Silver Hill issue from Mark Oughton. When I was elected as the city MP in 1997, Silver Hill was a proposal. Now, almost 20 years later, nothing has been done. What a total shambles and waste of money. How much has this cost in taxpayers' money? It's a disgrace and an embarrassment to the city. Somebody, please step in and sort this mess out at last. Hugh Oughton, High Street, Twyford. And another letter on the vexed Silver Hill development. This one comes from Mark Oughton. When I was elected as the city MP in 1997, Silver Hill was a proposal. Now, almost 20 years later, nothing has been done. What a total shambles and waste of money. How much has this cost in taxpayers' money? It's a disgrace and embarrassment to the city. Somebody, please step in and sort this mess out at last. Mark Oughton, High Street, Twyford.
On a slightly lighter note, this letter is headed Bike Update. I'm sure the readers of the Chronicle would like to know that as a result of the articles and photographs you recently published in your papers, my grandson Dominic and I have refurbished and sold 21 bicycles, raising £1,000 towards the £3,000 commitment he has pledged to raise for the charity Action Against Hunger, which feeds starving children in over 40 countries around the world, and for which he now has to complete a sponsored, arduous 8-day trek to Machu Picchu, high up in the Andes mountains of Peru, this August. Dominic, who lives in Winchester and is currently a student at the University of Birmingham, and I would like to say a sincere thank you to the residents of Winchester and district who have been so generous, even paying up to £50 more than the asking price for some bikes. He sums up his motivation for this challenge as follows. It is unacceptable that people should be denied a basic standard of living and, worse, die as a result of starvation. I think that we must all do everything we can to ensure that people around the world are given the means to survive, flourish, and enjoy life. We have a long way to go to secure this goal, but if we all do our bit, I believe it is possible to make a difference. However, he still has to raise another £2,000 by other fundraising activities, and would also really appreciate donations which can be made on, this is quite a long one, www.birminghammachupicchu.everydayhero.com/UK/Dominic. Meanwhile, Grandpa Brian has only 5 bikes left, all totally renovated, serviced, and in outstanding condition. See Chronicle online and classified section for details. Contact telephone number 01962 854 967 for your last chance to grab a bargain. Brian F. Bush, Old Hillside Road, Tegdown, Winchester.
This heading is She is Culpable, and the letter is from Percy Bidwell of Milton Road, Adderbury, Oxfordshire. Re the unfortunate Connor Sparrowhawk, other victims of negligent care under the aegis of Chief Executive Katrina Percy of Southern Health NHS Trust, who can blame the outraged relatives for paying for Mrs. Percy's blood. It happened on her watch, therefore she is culpable. If she was unaware of these shocking deaths, she should have been. If she was privy to them, she should have held up her hand and said, "I am responsible," and then resigned with whatever grace she could muster. If she does not resign, I say that there is every chance of a similar future catastrophe, for she is not fit for purpose. US President Harry Truman had a brass plaque screwed to his desktop. It scanned, "The buck stops here." Instead of this culture of failure so regularly rewarded in the UK, we could do well to emulate the Japanese, where honour and integrity are still highly valued, though I am told that they rarely throw themselves on their swords nowadays. Do the decent thing, Mrs. Percy. Resign. For failing this, you should be dismissed. Percy Bidwell, Milton Road, Adderbury, Oxfordshire.
I suppose this letter is health-related as well. It comes from James Anderson and is called Bitterness Tax. County Councillor Alan Dowden wants Hampshire County Council to debate sugar and lobby Parliament, reported in the Daily Mail, January the 22nd. Not much on at county then. How does God's solar crop, the vegetarian food supply of carbohydrates, starches and sugars, come to be demonised? Track the research that the NHS relies on, back to source, and it's not about sugars per se. Instead, it says that liquidised foods, juices, soups and baby food, are so easy to ingest that gluttony can be readily achieved, and the NHS wants them taxed. So a whole orange is good, but a squeezed orange is bad. The first crack in the logic appears with milk. It has just under half the sugars of Coca-Cola, but 40% more total calories. The NHS would look stupid if it were consistent here, so milk is deemed an exception. The bulk of the obesity problem is in the 45 to 75 age group, and neither fizzy drinks nor free sugars play much part. ex-NHS boss David Nicholson was a self-acknowledged example. Campaigners seem to think, naively, that there'll be no reaction when it's just a short step to replacing sugars with starches and sweeteners. That flapjack will have the same calories as before, rightly, since it is intended as a quick energy source. Why tax it in a hospital vend? The NHS offers help with smoking cessation, but nothing on weight control. Instead, it wants to penalise the 70% of us who will never be obese in our lives with an indiscriminate tax, rather than rolling up its sleeves and tackling the psychosocial failings of the minority. As the world's largest state-owned enterprise, the NHS knee-jerk solution is usually state compulsion out of self-interest. I've had state control of my diet during wartime rationing, healthy but boring as sawdust. The UK is already uncompetitive on the world stage, and more tax just makes that worse. Food labelling is simple. Getting fat, cut alcohol, eat less, and stop blaming the food. Not getting fat, just enjoy. James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
This letter is headed Stop Wasting Cash from G.N. Barrett. Hampshire County Council wasting £2 million on finding how obesity occurs. Surely this money would be better off reintroducing cuts that are more beneficial to the public. The answer is plain to see, Mr. Cameron. He is well behind the times. We, the public, have been living within our means for several decades, certainly since the enrolment to the EU. Cost of living here in the South is three times that of the North, the last time I was informed. Much of our medication has side effects, which can cause diabetes, overweight, etc. These are not taken into consideration by doctors. It's always something else, like under stress. Come on, HCC, stop wasting taxpayers' money. That's another good cause. Overtaxing the not-so-well-off, like pensioners. G.N. Barrett, Nicholson Place, Alsford.
This letter is headed More Development, and it's by Liz Horn of Sussex Street, Winchester. As if we don't have enough inappropriate development to complain about, usually in vain, of course. Now, on page 3 of the Chronicle, you have presented us with yet another, the Chesil Theatre extension. Is this really a serious proposal? No, surely not. What does it contribute to the street scene? Nothing. In fact, in my opinion, it insults it, in the same way that the proposed development of the car park will diminish the character of Chesil Street and the backdrop of St Giles Hill forever. The materials of the theatre extension, as suggested by The Impression, do not even acknowledge the traditional construction of the 12th century church it purports to extend. In fact, compare it with the existing adjoining houses, which it will sadly replace, the houses are more appropriate. And has any thought been given to the appearance of the rear hall of the proposed building when viewed from the weirs? It will be, to quote, a monstrous intrusion into the varied collection of architectural styles which have developed over many centuries and are now appreciated by residents and visitors alike. It would seem from The Impression that we shall be presented with a white, plastic-boarded wall above a brick wall. Very exciting, unless, of course, the theatre intends to use it as electronic advertising. Now, there's a thought. I'm sure somebody, someone, somewhere can do better than this.
This letter comes from Anne Coleman and is headed Health Concern. I am very concerned at the government's proposal for the junior doctor's new contract. Last year, I was admitted to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester for major emergency surgery. I received first-class attention. Everyone at the hospital, from doctors to cleaners, had excellent staff-patient skills. I ended up staying at the hospital for over 3 weeks, so during that time I began to see how complex the work is. On the day of the operation, I was due to be seen at 2 p.m., but due to a more serious patient being admitted, my operation was delayed. By 5 p.m., I thought I would have to wait until the next day. To my surprise, the medical team arrived at 6 p.m. to take me to surgery. My surgeon did not complete the operation until after 10:30 p.m. I'm sure when he arrived at work that morning, he did not expect to be working so late. I have nothing but praise for the NHS, and the people of Winchester are so fortunate to have such an amazing hospital and staff. During my hospital stay, I was in over several weekends, and the care was still excellent. Some patients are sent home over the weekend, leaving behind the more seriously ill patients. This goes some way to explaining why the mortality rate is higher at this time, as they are more likely to die. The government needs to listen to staff who persistently remind them of the detrimental effect the new contract will have on our healthcare system. Accident and emergency departments already face staff shortages. Many junior doctors work 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday to Friday, but will be expected to work longer hours, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday to Saturday. Stress and burnout is already high among doctors. Overexhausted junior doctors will be working dangerously long hours. It's unfair on doctors, unsafe for patients, and will undermine the future of our wonderful NHS. If this new contract goes ahead, we will have more ill health, sick leave, low morale, and resignation among the NHS staff trying to cover longer working hours. We need a contract to encourage more people to be medically trained to join our NHS, not fewer. The government needs to think again. Anne Coleman, Edgar Road, Winchester.
Another family shop bites the dust. So another family shop bites the dust. I refer to J. Collins and Son, the jewellers on the corner of Parchment Street and St. George's Street. Chronicle, January the 14th. Prior to redevelopment in the 1950s, when St. George's Street was widened, my father's gents' hairdressing salon graced this site with the post office tavern next door. These buildings were demolished, with the jeweller's shop the replacement. Sharp's jewellers commenced there, but I remember Mr. Sharp having his shop opposite, where the Casson block is today. I recall other family shops here, such as Mr. Portsmouth, baker, Miss Hornsey, wools, Mr. Nutter, butcher, Mr. Baker, shoe repairer, Mr. Piper, coal merchant, and Godrich and Petman, wine merchants. The premise is now occupied by Paris Smith solicitors. However, there are still three jewellers in the street. What will replace Collins? Please, not another coffee shop. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Thank you for reading all of those letters. Indeed, it is a mixed bag. And next we're going to have your say when people of Winchester were asked by the Chronicle's roving reporter what they should spend the 33 million lotto jackpot claimed by a woman who put her ticket through the wash. Is that what money laundering is, Jerry?
Oh, dear. Oh, dear, oh, dear.
It's the best I could do.
Well, Brian Kirbishley, 61, of Jury Street, Winchester, said, I'd probably give money to friends and family, and I'd give money to support Syrian refugees, and also use some to travel the world. And Vicky Foster, 33, housewife of Cromwell Road, Stanmore, said, I'd buy myself a nice big house, sort my family out, and go on a nice holiday. Adam Nicholas, 54, fly fishing teacher of St. Cross, said, I'd put in a bid for the salmon fishery at Totten, and that would be it for me. And Dean Dyson, 60, a musician of four marks, said, "Oh, there's so many things I would do with it. I want to help friends and family, and then look at using it to expand my music."
Thank you very much. And now, if you have opinion or subject you'd like to air on the in the Hampshire Chronicle pages, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email them, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's all lowercase and no spaces. news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we've got editorial comment, and this week the editor asks, how to preserve the essence of this city? Two seemingly unrelated stories are on pages 1 and 2 of this week's Chronicle. The first is the opposition of scores of local residents to Peter Simmons College's plan to develop a hitherto open part of its campus. The other is the Sparsholt College proposal for a green gas mill, which will convert harvested grass into gas and is expected to produce power for itself and the equivalent of nearly 5,000 homes a year. It will mean an increase in lorries accessing the campus. Both stories are related in that they involve highly successful local institutions evolving in the 21st century. Peter Simmons is now a regional college, attracting students from 20 to 40 miles away. Sparsholt has moved from being a strictly agricultural place of learning, where people were taught how to plough in a straight line, as it too meets demands, new demands indeed. In both cases, people who live nearby are concerned that the quality of their lives will be impacted. Winchester is a place that is highly sought after, especially to live in and to study in. That creates pressures on housing, pressure on schools, as well as social services and healthcare. Managing this issue is something that everyone who lives in this area is increasingly going to have to face. It will take the highest skill to juggle competing demands while preserving what makes Winchester special. And next we've got a letter from Westminster, which is contributed by Steve Brine this week. Robin, please.
It has been said many times that a backbench MP has limited power, but potentially a great deal of influence. More than 5 years in, I agree with that. A good example of such, and the ability of this role to make a real difference, came last week when many years of work and campaigning saw the Psychoactive Substances Bill clear its final stage in the House of Commons. Constituents have consistently raised with me their concern about so-called legal highs, and generally, and sadly, we have seen some tragic deaths, including locally, as a result of the case. Because they have been legal, due to the chemists staying one step ahead of the law, the message went out that these party drugs are safe, harmless fun. They are not, and the parents I have met who've lost children as a result of these drugs know that better than anyone. Years of pressure saw the proposal to introduce a blanket ban on psychoactive substances included in my party's manifesto last year, and the bill was a key part of the first Queen's speech. The opening of the head shop on Stockbridge Road last year provoked a huge response, passed as it is by hundreds of young people and school children every day, in my post bag, and was rightly covered by the Hampshire Chronicle. There was, of course, relief just before Christmas when the shop was finally closed down after a long-winded antisocial behaviour laws. After many of us raised concerns with police, local authorities, and trading standards. As I said in Parliament, I know many of my constituents were pleased to see the back of this outlet and will welcome the new law which makes its return extremely difficult. I have spoken at every stage of the Bill's Commons stages, including last week as it cleared the final hurdle and is now expected to receive royal assent. We need to now work with the police to bed it down and step up more than ever. Sensitive and evidence-based education among young people of the dangers of all drugs present to them and their future. You can find out more and follow the links to my work on this subject via www.stevebryan.com/legalhighs. Finally, so much of the success of the British economy in recent years is down to the entrepreneurs who create the businesses and welcome and become employers of tomorrow. It was good to visit IncuHive in Chandler's Ford, which provides a safe space backed up by mentors who have been successful in business for future business leaders to work on their ideas. It was created and developed by entrepreneur and business and senior business management lecturer at the University of Winchester, Steve Northam, and it's well worth a look. www.incuhive.co.uk. You can find out more information about my wider work as your local MP in Westminster and the constituency at www.stevebryan.com or through 01962 791110.
And we've got first person next. Ron Allison is looking back with gratitude, but why would that be, Jerry?
Well, if you wait 2 or 3 minutes, I'll tell you. 3 or so days ago, well, it all depends on when you settle down to read the Chronicle, the family was celebrating yet another of my birthdays. The precise number doesn't really matter. Let me just say that I am well able to remember what life was like in England before the Second World War. This year I found myself in a somewhat reflective mood, thinking back over the years to the many and varied people who had influenced me in one way or another. Well, some came to mind immediately, they were obvious. Others, though, emerged from my thoughts only as I remembered and realised, yes, he really did make a difference. If it hadn't been for her, I would never have. All in all, it was something I both enjoyed doing and found extremely worthwhile. The obvious influences, though none the less valued for being so, include my parents and grandparents. To this day, the basics of my life are those that I grew up with from early childhood. My parents would feel immediately at home in our house. Well, they might not get the hang of all the gadgets immediately, though they would certainly come to appreciate many of them. The point of it all, the family, the home, the garden, the neighbours, a lifestyle of mixing work with recreation, thinking of others as well as ourselves, these were and are the guiding principles. Differences of opinion, the occasional argument, yes, of course, they are part of it, giving us experiences from which we benefit. Away from home come the almost equally obvious teachers. At first women, later men, they taught me through the years, from reading and writing to the sixth form levels, above all getting me to think and to appreciate art and literature, music and drama. Some were more successful than others. Some, I would have to say, failed. Sorry, Mr. Garnett, Latin. At school came responsibilities, learning the lessons of leadership and of being good team players. There are several Sunday school teachers who come to mind as well, along with many church leaders who led, taught, and influenced by example. From school, it was, in my case, into the British Army for 2 years national service. Many men of influence there, big, noisy, scary drill sergeants, with power to go with their three stripes. A weekend pass, it was theirs to grant or withhold. On the whole, it was very good for many of us. "I don't think the sergeant likes me," was met with, "Well, don't worry, he doesn't like any of us." All the while, my ambition was to become a journalist, and many in their time helped me along that road. My early days on this very newspaper, learning my trade under the guidance of Monica Woodhouse, Lloyd Woodland and Jock Coutts, could not have been better spent. That led to broadcasting and to the BBC's West Region, as it then was. The controller who appointed me was Frank Gillard, who along with Richard Dimbleby was one of my heroes as a BBC war correspondent. Frank played a huge role in my development alongside Godfrey Talbot and many other splendid news reporters and correspondents. So many different people have advised and influenced me. Not celebs or those in prominent jobs, but men and women who showed kindness or thoughtfulness and were happy to share their experiences, whether or not they were involved in my professional life. Above all, it's good to be able to say that those who matter most, and therefore are the most influence, are those in the family. As a further generation within that family would take me to great-grandparenthood, it seemed appropriate to look back. I find I do so with gratitude, and for that, I am even more indebted. Ron Allison.
Time standing still in centre. This is from Belgarum. There are parts of Winchester city centre which are so run down, it appears time has stood still. This is not helped by the area's most prominent clock being stuck. It has been years since the Brooks Shopping Centre clock last moved on one side, and the other is fast by an hour. The hands facing up St George's Street are stuck at 4:05 p.m, a particularly cruel time for Sunday shop workers who might think they've finished their shift. It also faces the Chronicle offices, greatly confusing journalists who struggle enough to meet their deadlines. Grumbles have not quite reached the pitch they did when the clock broke at the old Guildhall, also known as Lloyd's Bank, on the High Street. And it's not the only problem with the Brooks, but time is certainly getting on. Perhaps we could ensure the clock is fixed by tweaking the details in the agreement over the Silver Hill regeneration. That shouldn't be too difficult, should it?
And the second piece from Belgarum, an alternative look at the news. Buskers get in choir jam. When rock and roll clashes with the music of God, who comes out the winner? Well, it's 1-0 to Team Heaven after buskers in Winchester High Street were moved on by police after a complaint by a nearby church. Winchester Community Choir, recording in St Lawrence Church, was disturbed by Jim Hammond's duo's amplified double bass on Saturday afternoon. After asking the group to turn it down twice, the church called in the police. A heated exchange of words followed, and bassist Brian Andrews didn't hesitate to let officers know what he thought. Band leader Jim Hammond told Belgarum, "We're working for a living by playing music. If we were here with jackhammers digging a road up, there would be nothing said." Buskers don't need a licence to perform in Winchester, but they can be moved on by police if there's complaints over noise or misbehaviour. "This is the only town we get this in," Mr Hammond added. "I busk in Reading, I busk in Portsmouth and Southampton, Leicester and Birmingham. I travel all over the country and I don't get this. I do everything professionally." A collaboration with Winchester Community Choir seems unlikely then. Moving on now to historical items. And I've got 200 years to read to you, and it's 200 years ago, January the 28th, 1816, and it's headed Ship Trials. A trial of the Congo was made on Friday, which did not answer expectation, and Monday was fixed for another trial. The steamboat, lightened of her loggers, masks and riggings, made her way much better than this on the first day. She drew from 4 feet 3 to 4 feet 6 inches of water and went for the most part at a rate of 5.5 miles in the hour. She started off Deptford Dockyard at a few minutes after 12 o'clock against tide. The experiment served but to confirm the apprehensions previously entertained. Since it is proved that her masts, rigging, etc. were removed, she will not draw less than 4 feet 3 inches of water. It follows that when transported to Africa, her draft cannot be sufficiently small or her velocity sufficiently great to answer the purpose for which she was constructed. The second item is headed Peace with Old Enemy. A Court of Common Council was held on Thursday at Guildhall for the purpose of considering an address of congratulation to the Prince Regent on the conclusion of peace with France. The question was carried in the affirmative on a show of hands by a majority of 10-1. The debates on this subject were so much protracted that the property tax was postponed till a future day.
100 years ago, January the 29th, 1916, German air raid. The Secretary of the War Office made the following announcements on Sunday at 12:55 p.m. Taking advantage of the bright moonlight, a hostile aeroplane visited the east coast of Kent at 1 o'clock this morning, January the 23rd, after dropping 9 bombs in rapid succession, made off seawards. No naval or military damage was done, but some damage was caused to private property and an incendiary bomb caused fires which, however, were extinguished by 2 a.m. It is regretted that, according to reports received, the following civilian casualties occurred. One man killed and 2 men, 1 woman and 3 children slightly injured. 2 hostile seaplanes made a second attack upon the same locality shortly after noon today. After coming under heavy fire, the raiders disappeared. And the second item is headed Enemy Barrage. The Germans maintain their activity in the west. In addition to vain attacks on the Arras-Lens road in Artois, they fired no fewer than 20,000 shells near Nieuport at the mouth of the Isère. But the French guns prevented an infantry attack. To the northwest of Ypres also, the Germans showed some liveliness.
50 years ago, January the 29th, 1966. The first item is headed Dangerous Ploughing. A dozen Molotov cocktails, lethal relics from the last war, were found in a field at Fisher's Pond on Thursday afternoon. Mr. Jeff Turner of Eastleigh, who works for Mr. Leslie Emery on the Marwell Manor farm, was ploughing near the main Portsmouth Road when he noticed smoke and flames coming from a freshly turned furrow. He informed the police, thinking he might have cut an electricity cable, and they in turn summoned the bomb disposal unit when the cocktails were identified. A form of improvised hand grenade, they were usually made by filling bottles with petrol or other explosive material. And the second item is headed Fluoridation Question. 2 water undertakings will be asked to supply fluoridated water to parts of Hampshire if the February meeting of the Hampshire County Council approves resolutions passed by the Council's Health Committee at Winchester on Tuesday. In addition to being asked to include £5,000 in the 1966/67 estimates to meet the cost of the fluoridation, the Council are to be recommended to tell the Minister of Health that in their opinion, because of the present situation in the county, the only way to deal with the matter is by legislation on a national scale.
25 years ago, January the 25th, 1991. Busman's Holiday. The man who Hampshire Department deals with more than 20,000 complaints and inquiries every year did some complaining of his own on Wednesday. County Trading Standards Officer Mr. David Hughes told the Public Protection Committee in Winchester that his complaint and that of his staff was about being grossly overworked. Presenting his fourth annual report to the committee, Mr. Hughes said there were many complaints and inquiries that went unrecorded by his department through sheer pressure of work. The department's first prosecution for the sale of an unroadworthy car brought a penalty of £750. And the second section, Cathedral Revamp, is the title. Winchester's historic cathedral is undergoing its first major facelift since William Walker the diver saved the monument in the early part of this century. The interior of the 900-year-old building has been dramatically transformed by a mass of scaffolding which is preparing the way for the tower masonry and woodwork repair programme. A Hampshire scaffolding company is building a bridge underneath the tower which will be used by the restorers. The rest of the scaffolding will then be removed and the work in the inside and outside of the tower is expected to take 2 years to complete.
Thank you all for those. And those were our weekly regular features. So we're going to take a look now at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. Well, the first thing I've got for you is that the cathedral is to host a festival. A choir festival will be taking place next month. The Cathedral's Group Choir Festival 2016 is on February the 27th from 7 p.m. And the event will see singers from the cathedral's groups, higher education institutions, join the Southern Sinfonia and accompanied by the cathedral's organ for a show featuring more than 300 performers. Tickets are £10 and they can be bought at Winchester Cathedral box office by calling 01962 857 275. 01962 857275. Another concert is on January the 30th. It's the Chairman's Concert, a celebration of peace. And that too is at Winchester Cathedral. And as I said, it's on January the 30th. It has special reference to World War I, Hampshire County Youth Orchestra. And they're playing Britten, Brahms, Pott, Mozart, Malzberger, Shostakovich. It's a standing-only concert, but some chairs will be available for those in need. And that's £10, with concessions of £5. And it's a £75 booking fee if you do it from www.winchester-cathedral.org.uk. That's www.winchester-cathedral.org.uk. The Chairman's Concert, a celebration of peace. And turning the page, what have you in the theatre? Well, at the Plaza Theatre, Romsey, they're doing Jack and the Beanstalk to Sunday, January the 31st. And that's at various times, so if you're going to book, you can ask them that. And then Forbidden Nights follows on Thursday and Friday, the 4th and 5th of February at 7:30. So that's Jack and the Beanstalk, if you fancy a panto, or Forbidden Nights. That's the Plaza Theatre, Romsey, box office 01794 512 987. 01794 512 987. And another very special event, which I'm going to read for you, involves the programme Downton Abbey. Now, if you're a follower, you'd really be interested in this. The item has got a photograph in it with Hugh Bonneville and Samantha Bond and Laura Carmichael and Julian Fellowes, the writer. So it's headed Downton Ladies to host a special evening at the theatre. Downton Abbey fans lamenting the end of the hugely popular period drama can look forward to an evening with its stars next month in Southampton. Nuffield have announced a special evening with two major cast members of the internationally acclaimed ITV series on February the 7th at the Nuffield Theatre. Laura Carmichael, who played Lady Edith Crawley, and Samantha Bond, who was Lady Rosamund Painswick, will talk about their lives in TV, theatre and film at this special one-off event to raise funds for Nuffield's charitable activities. The evening will be hosted by BBC South Today presenter Sally Taylor, MBE. The news comes as the final series of ITV's Downton Abbey won Best Drama for the fourth time in 5 years at the 2016 National Television Awards. Laura Carmichael, who made her West End debut in 2012, is from Southampton and starred in Nuffield's 2008 production of The President's Holiday. Other theatre credits include Uncle Vanya at the Vaudeville Theatre and Plenty at Sheffield Crucible, as well as films Madame Bovary and Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Samantha Bond originally found fame on Nuffield's main stage in the world premiere of Daisy Pulls It Off. She is particularly well known on the big screen as Miss Moneypenny in James Bond. Other theatre credits including Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Savoy Theatre and the King James Readings, alongside BBC's Outnumbered. Both actresses are Nuffield associate actors, alongside actor Tom Hiddleston and actress Celia Imrie, who are ambassadors supporting the vision for Nuffield as the leading producing theatre company in Southampton. Downton Abbey creator Julian Fellowes, speaking at the National Television Awards this week, and said he would like to make a Downton Abbey movie, saying it would be a very, very good, fun thing to do. The tickets for Downton Abbey, An Evening with Laura Carmichael and Samantha Bond are available at nuffieldtheatre.co.uk. That's lowercase, no spaces, nuffieldtheatre.co.uk, or from the box office 02380 671771. I'll read that number again. 02380671771. Before we move on to the general news, here are the lighting up times. Starting on Saturday, the 30th of January, the sun will set at 4:52 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 3rd of February, the sun will rise at 7:40 a.m. and will set at 4:59 p.m. And so on to items of general news with Claire starting us off, please.
Watch us rocking at the RA. Budding rock stars at Winchester's Special School have released footage of their performance at the Royal Albert Hall. Pupils from Osborne wowed the venue at a music event just before Christmas, topping off a year which saw them sing across the country. 24 children with learning difficulties performed pop hits under the name Rubik's Cube, incorporating Makaton Sign Language. Teachers say performing helps pupils focus and can dramatically improve behaviour. Head teacher Sonia O'Donnell said the children are so motivated they just light up when they're doing their thing. They express themselves and be themselves. The idea began in 2009 with former pupil Michael Matthews, who took up the drums. He asked teacher Ben Dglugogeki to form the band, which has performed ever since. Liam Chandler, who's 14, said, It's like living in a world of fantasy and excitement when you go on the stage. Megan James, 15, added, "It's brilliant fun and I want to do it again." No words do justice to how thrilling, memorable and exciting performing at the Royal Albert Hall was for the staff, pupils and their families, Mr. Dlugo Gekke said. See the video at osborneschool-winchester.com. To book the band, call Osborne School on 01962 854 537.
Plans tabled for green gas mill. Plans have been submitted for a controversial new eco gas station at a Hampshire college that could pump £60 million into the local economy. Sparsholt College near Winchester announced in August they will work with green electricity company Ecotricity to build a renewable energy plant. The green gas mill, which turns grass into gas by boiling it, is expected to produce power for the equivalent of nearly 5,000 homes per year, including the college. It will also contribute to the national gas grid. The college says the mill will pump £3 million into the local economy every year for the 20 years of its operation. However, there has been a lot of negative feedback from residents concerned about extra traffic and the routes chosen to transport the fuel, cut grass and rye feedstock supplied from local farmland. Sue Wood, chairman of Sparsholt Parish Council, said they were still waiting for Ecotricity to answer scores of unanswered questions. Following the communication event at the college, we raised over 50 questions to enable us to fully understand exactly how this application would affect local residents and surrounding villages, she added. Ecotricity, to be fair, did take time in answering questions put to them at the meeting. We had a very open mind, so we just want to understand what impact it will have on local residents and the local area. Although we received answers to most of the questions, we were told that the remainder would be addressed when the application was submitted. However, the full application is still not available to us until it has been validated by Winchester City Council's planning department. When that becomes available, we will be able to comment further. The application will be validated within the next 2 weeks. As part of the partnership, Ecotricity will finance and build the mill with an additional £10 million investment. They will then help fund the development of a renewable energy centre where the college can train students. Sparsholt College Principal Tim Jackson said, "We have addressed residents' concerns in the planning application and can reassure people that the mill will only receive normal farm traffic typical of the countryside. We will ensure deliveries don't happen during peak traffic times. Tractors stick to main roads wherever possible and do not go through Sparsholt. Up to 8 specialist jobs will be created to run the mill, while new supply contracts with farmers will also reinforce existing jobs." Mr. Jackson added, "The green gas mill will be a key component in the college's development of a centre of excellence. A public exhibition will be showcased at Wesley Court, Sparsholt College, on February the 9th from 1 to 8pm. And the piece is illustrated by a picture of 3 domes.
Comedian pilots plan to help army veterans. One of Britain's best-known comedians has launched a series of gatherings to boost camaraderie among veterans in Hampshire. Jim Davidson, who lives near Stockbridge, hopes the meeting, which is being piloted in Southampton, will become a regular event across the UK. The event this evening is being organised by 62-year-olds Care After Combat charity, which aims to support veterans who are in or have gone to prison and prevent reoffending. It provides a programme to help veterans of conflicts such as in Iraq or Afghanistan adapt back into society, providing mentors and support with issues including housing, drug and alcohol abuse, post-traumatic stress, anxiety and depression. Now, the Whiteley-based charity is launching regular meetings to help boost camaraderie for all veterans and provide opportunities for them to network and discuss any issues since returning from service. The dad of five, who chairs the charity, said, "We're the sort of undercover charity. You won't see our guys doing a lap of honour because we look after the guys that are in prison. But when they come out, we put together a package to stop them reoffending. We also put together the alcohol and drug programmes for the veterans." Mr. Davidson's wife, Michelle, will be working hard, preparing a mountain of sandwiches, cakes and snacks ahead of the first meeting, which will take place from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Millbrook Army Reserve Centre in Southampton this evening. It will feature a talk on post-traumatic stress. And I suppose we have to point out that this was probably Thursday evening and therefore has now happened. The item goes on to say, if the evening is successful, the charity will launch similar events across the UK, which will run every 6 weeks. Care After Combat is currently supporting 44 veterans who are or have been in prison or involved in the criminal justice system. And 17 Hampshire veterans have been allocated a mentor for ongoing support. The charity confirmed that to date, none of the veterans on their books have reoffended.
Alleged conspirators deny drugs plot role. Five people have gone on trial accused of being part of a massive drugs conspiracy in Hampshire, which allegedly dealt nearly £700,000 worth of Class A drugs. Prosecutors say a gang based in the north of England was supplying cocaine and heroin in towns across the south, including Winchester and Southampton. Drugs would be ferried from the north to the south coast and money would be sent back up to Manchester, Southampton Crown Court heard. Gerard Quinn, Paul Williams, Sophia Jones, Pedro Ibanez Sanchez and Luke Nicholson are accused of being involved in that operation run by a gang called the Manchester Boys or the Manx. Michael Forster, prosecuting, told the jury how drugs were transported by train, car and even by post. Cash made from drugs was taken in return journeys back to Manchester or paid into various bank accounts in the south, then withdrawn in the north, it is alleged. The prosecution says between July 2013 and January last year, the Manx gang was involved in dealing almost 7 kilograms of drugs with an estimated street value of £676,000. This had a potential profit of nearly £400,000. "We're talking about a big money operation," said Mr. Forster. Jurors were told how mobile phone lines, called deal lines, were set up to contact drug users and buyers, and so that users could contact suppliers. Mr. Forster said a Southampton drug user would often be phoning a deal line in Manchester and someone in Southampton would then be arranged to supply the drugs. He said when drugs arrived on the south coast, it was often advertised to potential customers by sending huge numbers of text messages in bulk. One read, "Back on with both new food. which Mr. Forster said translated as both cocaine and heroin were back on sale. The jury was told that in 18 months, more than 18,000 bulk text messages were sent advertising drugs on 154 days. The court heard how, in a search warrant at an address in Manchester in May 2014, police found a sawn-off shotgun and ammunition in a shed, as well as Class A drugs. Quinn, who's 24, of Kilton Walk, Manchester, Williams, 25, of Pickard Close, Manchester, Jones, 29, of Sykeside Court, Rossendale, Lancashire, Ibana Sanchez, 24, of Walwork Street, Manchester, and Nicholson, 28, of Chiddingly Close, Brighton, are all accused of considerable conspiracy to supply cocaine and heroin. Quinn and Ibanez Sanchez also face a charge of money laundering. They deny all charges. The trial, expected to last up to 10 weeks, continues.
Award for City Architect. A mansion near Alsford is amongst the winners of the 2015 Georgian Group Architectural Awards. George Somers Smith of Adam Architecture, based in Hyde Street, Winchester, was awarded in the new category, in the new build, in classical tradition category, for Byton Grange. The judges agreed that few contemporary houses, country houses, are this self-assured or achieve such a degree of quiet dignity and inherent harmony. The awards, now in their 13th year, celebrate those who have demonstrated the vision and commitment to restore and create Georgian buildings and landscapes across the UK. The winners were announced at the Royal Institute of British Architects in London, with the awards presented by the Duke of Wellington. The winning schemes were chosen from a total of nearly 60 entries. Crispin Holborough of Savills Country Department, the sponsors and members of the judging panel, said, "It is vital that we continue to recognise the time and skill that goes into restoring and safeguarding some of the country's finest Georgian architecture."
Assault sentence. A man who attacked a woman at Mitchell Dever Station has been ordered to undertake a 32-session programme on building better relationships. Simon Downs, 36, of Barford St Martin near Salisbury, admitted assaulting Nicola McBride on December the 12th. Magistrates at Basingstoke also imposed a £60 victim surcharge and £85 costs.
Thank you very much, everyone, for all of that. And that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Another reminder for you that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870 370. And that's Irene Dowding. Thanks to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, to our editors, Gordon and Liz, and of course, many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Robin.
Bye.
And Jerry.
Bye.
And from me, Roz. Goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, putting the address label inside the wallet. Thank you. Have a good week and we'll speak to you soon. Goodbye.